Chapter 30, Freedom. Section A, What is Freedom? In the first place, freedom is not the power to do whatever we like, since man is simply incapable of doing always what he likes. There are many things which man would like to do, but he cannot, because his power is always limited. He would like to live forever, not to have any illness, to be always young, to know everything, etc. But it is evident that he cannot have his cake and eat it. How can we then think of freedom as the power to do what we like, when we know that this is not possible? This mirage is the product of a transposition of a divine attribute to the creature. It is the illusion of man who wants to be like God. Only God has omnipotence, i.e., the power to do what he wants. Divine freedom is infinitely greater than created freedom. The latter is participated only. Nevertheless, in spite of his limitations, it is true that man is free in his choices. Where is then the freedom of man exactly? In the fact that when he chooses something, he does so by himself, and there is no power whatsoever that can force his choice. This is the dignity of man. He can be induced or persuaded or attracted, but never forced. See Chapter 18, Section G. This free choice on the part of man, however, relates not to the end of man in the sense that man would be free to make his own real end, but only in the sense that man is free to determine himself towards that end, as well as to the means to reach it. St. Thomas defines human freedom as that property of the human will whereby man determines himself in his acts towards the end. Obviously, this freedom is limited, and so it is not omnipotence. It is simply that man determines himself, and there is no force from outside himself that can determine him in his choice. What does the intelligence do to the will? It specifies the choice, but it does not determine it. It presents things to the will, and the will chooses. It is true that the will cannot operate without the intelligence. How can I want something I do not know? In order to will, I must know. There is no intellectual appetite without previous intellectual knowledge. But still, the intelligence does not determine the will. It acts as a final cause, or even formal cause, but never as the efficient cause of the will, as we have said. St. Thomas also observes that on the will depends to will, or not to will, i.e., the will has the power to move itself, as we have explained. This means that creatures with will, i.e., spiritual creatures, order themselves towards the end, unlike other creatures, which are already ordered to their end by the fact that they exist. Section B, Inner Freedom and Exterior Freedom. So far, we have been talking about the inner freedom of the will, namely the freedom, 1, to want or not to want, freedom of exercise, or 2, to want this or that, freedom of specification. But there is also an exterior freedom to perform operations externally, which can be curtailed by forces outside man. If a man is put in jail, he has lost his exterior freedom, but no one can take away from him his interior freedom. It is something inalienable, i.e., it cannot be lost or taken away from anybody. Political freedom, professional freedom, academic freedom are exterior freedoms. This freedom of the will is also a proof of the spirituality of the act of the will, because purely material acts are always necessary, in such a way that they are directed to the end without any choice. On the other hand, the act of the will is directed to the end in such a way that there is an alternative. Section C, Freedom of Choice, Determinism. It has been said that man has no freedom of choice, that he chooses as necessarily as anything else. This is called determinism, and there are many types of it, depending on what they think determines the will. Example 1. Physiological determinism. The will is determined by the biochemistry of the body, by the so-called gut feeling. 2. Sociological determinism. Man is determined by the cultural values he has inherited. 3. Economic determinism. Man's choice is determined by the economic infrastructure. Marxism. See Chapter 48, Section C. 4. Fatalistic determinism, the choice is determined by fate, good or bad luck. 5. Theological determinism, God determines the choice of man, Calvinism. 6. Psychoanalytical determinism, choices are determined by the basic complexes of man, a combination of libido, Freud, and all accumulated experiences of the past, Jung. The logical consequence of determinism, and we can see that all these types are largely materialistic in inspiration, is that man is stripped of his moral responsibility. His guilt is transferred to some other source. Thus, in the last analysis, they are all forms of escapism. The existence of freedom, of choice, in the human will, and consequent moral responsibility, is shown by appealing to two types of evidence. 1. The evidence of self-consciousness, whereby any man can verify within himself that when he chooses, he could perfectly well have chosen the opposite if he only wanted to. 2. The evident fact of a universal acceptance of a moral code and of legal responsibility, which would be unwarranted if man were not responsible for his actions. What would be the point of legal systems, judges, and courts? If man is determined in his choices, no one can attribute any responsibility to his acts. He would always be like an irresponsible minor who cannot be tried by any court. Those who deny human freedom of choice live in a society which does not accept such a denial, since the moral order and the social order are built on the assumption that man is free and thereby responsible. The acceptance of determinism would spell the collapse of society. Section D, the root of the freedom of man. Why is man free and not necessitated in his choices? What is the metaphysical root of this freedom? It lies in the object of the will, namely the good in a universal sense. See chapter 29, section A. Let us recall that this is why the will is directed to the fullness of real good. And this is where man's self-determination lies, since in this life, man can never be confronted with the fullness of good. 1. Because no created good is the fullness of good. And 2. Because even God, in this life, is only known by man imperfectly, and therefore this knowledge is not the fullness of good either. Therefore, since no good in this life is the fullness of good, none of them can determine the will of man necessarily. They can attract the human will, but not determine it necessarily. This is why the human will is free and not necessitated. No outside force can overcome it or coerce it as long as man is in possession of his faculties. Section E, freedom and necessity. The closer one is to God, the more freedom one has from the necessity of material causes. The more material a being is, the more determined and the less free it is, and the more spiritual, the less determined and the more free. For the will to be actuated necessarily, this necessity has to come from itself, can only occur if the will is confronted with the fullness of real good, which, being the object of the will, is what really makes the will happy without limits. Can this happen in this life? As we just said, in this life there can be no necessary actualization of the will. In heaven, however, being confronted by the fullness of its object, the will adheres to God necessarily. Although this necessity is not a necessity of coercion from outside, but a necessity from the will itself. It is not, therefore, a negation of freedom, but its perfection, as it makes the willing more unfailing. While the willing in this life can easily fail, since this is one of the limitations of our freedom, in heaven, on the other hand, in confrontation with the good as such, the will can no longer fail. This is the perfection of freedom, since it is a self-determination which can no longer fail. The difficulty that states that in heaven there is no freedom since we can no longer sin is a fallacy. The answer is that freedom in heaven is no longer a freedom of choice, but the perfect freedom of the will, because the essence of freedom is self-determination from inside. And this is what the will does in front of God, clearly seen, to determine itself from the inside, unfailing, without any necessity of coercion from outside. The saints in heaven participate in that greater freedom to love, which is the freedom of God. What seems to be a necessity in heaven is in fact the greatest freedom to love the total good, and brings with it the greatest inner self-determination towards the good. Section F. Freedom and the Good. Man sometimes chooses evil things. What is the relationship between freedom and the good? We have said that the object of the will is good as such. The freedom of choice with regard to created things is pointless if it is separated from the love of God, who is the total good. Now, human choices with regard to created goods condition our lives to concrete situations which exclude other situations. If I choose to travel in a certain town, I cannot at the same time go to another town. When I make a choice, I condition my life. Freedom of choice is conditioned. Nevertheless, in every concrete situation, man can and should love God and give glory to Him by relating all his choices to the last end, and thus increasing his freedom, as we have explained. Section G. Free Volition of Evil. But can man love evil as such? We already answered this in the negative. See chapter 19, section G, and chapter 29, section A. The so-called choice of evil, or sin, consists in wanting a certain good, but in a disorderly way, i.e., something which is not due, disorderly because the order of means to end is disrupted. We can, in this light, see the essence of sin. What is the end of man? God. Therefore, if man fails to love God, he falls into sin. It does not matter where he falls away from God. This is sin. The failure to love God followed by a choice of a participated good in preference to the fullness of good. The defect or failure is in the free will that fails to love as it should. Consequently, the will moves the intelligence to omit thinking about God, i.e., about the good which is rejected. This is the voluntary intellectual defect to be found in sin. In every sin, there is an error of the intelligence. But it is a voluntary error, a failure to consider what the will does not want. I don't want God, so I will not think of Him. I will rather think of my own interest, of what I like. It is both a decision of the will and a failure of the intelligence moved by the will. The first motion of the will comes from God, and then the motion of the will as second cause. See chapter 29, section F. Does this mean that God can cause sin? The answer is that the sinful action as a being is caused by God, like every being, but the defect in it is the result of the free choice of the creature. It is the created will that makes the sin a sin, not God. God causes the act of the will as a being, but the wrong direction of the will comes from the will itself. The will can point either to the good or to the evil, but the actual motion towards either of them comes from God. Nevertheless, God moves his creatures in accordance with their nature. See chapter 24, section G. And the will is free, as we have seen. Therefore, he moves it in accordance with its freedom.